What's up, everybody? Welcome to SWAT MMA. We're smoking weed and we're talking mixed martial arts. This is episode number 109. I'm Jared, here with Paul.
What up?
We're coming to you from the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. Today, we are going to be smoking and talking about the current state of the Ultimate Fighting Championship. We're going to discuss BKFC and their emergence on the scene as a legitimate promotion. We're going to discuss the PFL starting to really shine with this year's season. Before we dive into that and a few other topics, let's get into the weed of the week. Smoke weed every day. Ooh, this week, my friend, we are smoking on some pineapple diesel, one of my favorites. It is a pure sativa. It is a cross, not too surprising with the name of pineapple and sour diesel. So it's going to be a little bit fruity, and it's going to give a nice little energetic buzz for us. Pineapple is it's actually a phenotype of Ed Rosenthal's Superbud, sometimes just shortened to ERSB. And then sour diesel is chem dog crossed with sour skunk. Super skunk. I thought I spilt the water in this bubbler right here, right when I was announcing the weed. But yeah, chem dog and super skunk. Again, all strains I love. Sour diesel, one of my favorites. Pineapple, kind of hard to come by. The combination is choice, my friend. So while we're puffing this down, this is a little cash. I was going to say this looks a little cash. We hope that you listening are enjoying some hopefully legal cannabis wherever you are. And if not, that's just fine.
I'm an asshole.
What did you do this weekend, man? You asshole.
Yes. I smoked that whole bowl down and then I was like, oh yeah, we'll smoke this one instead.
That's funny. No, you did something a little bit our viewers or listeners might be interested in this weekend.
I went to the WWE SummerSlam over the weekend.
Now, that's been in the news, not only because it's a big WWE event, but it's been into the news for some other reasons that you got to witness firsthand.
Firsthand.
And what is that's going on?
So Allegiant Stadium is a fucking mess of a place. Like, let's just be honest.
It's
like
a billion-dollar Raiders stadium they just built off the side of the strip.
Yeah, so don't get me wrong. It's, structurally wise, it's beautiful. It's great. It's cool.
I haven't been in it yet. I've driven by plenty of times.
The seats are cool. Like, the, you know, everything's pretty solid, right? That in that respect.
Okay.
But there was so many just like laughable fucking situations that
went on. Well, be specific. What happened? So that was the big one.
To begin with, we get to our seats. Everybody gets through concessions. Everything in the first hour goes smooth, right? I finished my first beer. It's like, all right, let's go back to the concession stand and get another one.
Yes, wrestling, WWE, you need to have some beers.
Yeah, and I caught a little buzz before, so, you know, I was just trying to keep it going.
Right.
And so I go back to the concession stand, and they're like, hey, we can't let you purchase anything right now. Our credit card system is down. And I was like, oh, I'll just pay with cash.
Yeah,
like,
of course.
Sorry, we're a cashless venue. So we don't have drawers. We don't have cash here.
So just this one place you went to?
No.
They were a cashless venue?
No. The whole venue is cashless.
The whole venue stadium is cash. Yeah. Except no cash.
And their fucking card system went down for the whole event and the whole time. And so it got to this crazy frenzy level where the food was going to probably, you know, go bad or something. So they just started giving it all away.
Like, so they can't sell anything to people at a wrestling event.
Yeah.
Not.
Bro, there was 51,000.
Roman Greco wrestling at a WWE event.
51,000 people there.
Oh, bro. Wow. Okay.
And they couldn't sell shit. It got to the point where people in the crowd were chanting, "We want beer. We want beer." And I was one of them. I'm not going to lie.
So the cashless system goes down. They can't sell anything.
Can't sell shit. And then, you know, you got to go to the bathroom because, you know, you just drank the one beer you had too quick and now you got to pee. And then you go in the bathroom just to see that all the fucking stalls are overflowing on the fucking ground.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So you can't.
Can't buy anything. You can't use the restroom. So we're at that level. And then they're supposed to have this cool, like, high-tech Wi-Fi system in Allegiant Stadium where it, like, promotes people to, you know, use, like, all the hashtags on Instagram and all the bullshit that, you know, comes with extended Wi-Fi and people making bets and shit. Mm-hmm. The fucking Wi-Fi doesn't even work. The Wi-Fi didn't work in the whole stadium. And then,
oh my God.
And then when it comes to the actual event, don't get me wrong, the fucking wrestling part, the like WWE show part of it was great. Great time, super hype, all that good stuff. And then, their fucking pyrotechnic system wasn't working. Like, you'd hear, like, pop, 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 but nothing would come out.
Wait, so all the fireworks didn't go off? All the pyro, because that's a big event.
The only thing that
ever
happened was smoke. They, like, a couple guys had, like, came out to smoke.
So they're firing it. You can hear the cannons firing, and then there's nothing?
Like, you couldn't, like, it just sounded like.
It's just like pop, pop?
Like, it sounded like air. It's like air popping. That was it.
So you're, while you're sitting there sober.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, at least we get.
Cool, yeah.
Intros.
No, yeah. I mean, there was some cool ones with just smoke, but that was all they had.
So, no fault of the WWE.
No, it was all on the fucking
Allegiant Stadium. You can't take a piss, or God forbid, anything else.
Or buy beer.
You can't buy beer, or food.
Or food, or drinks.
You can't spend any money, period.
Yeah.
You can't buy any merch?
I bought merch on the outside. They had like a little, like WWE themselves had
so
a little outside.
So, they're
car.
Little people that had their little outside shit.
Yeah,
of course,
there,
they're not
yeah.
dumb. They're going to take cash.
Yeah.
Because Vince McMahon's not stupid.
Yeah.
So, I'm sorry, I think that a
cashless
stadium
is
idiotic.
Dumb.
That's stupid. Are you crazy?
Yeah, it's really dumb. I don't understand the point behind it, to be honest.
Because that happens. Like, look what happened. You know
I'm saying I don't understand the point behind a cashless stadium to begin with.
No, I mean, neither. It seems like you're really handicapping yourself in a way that you want to make as easy as possible.
Yeah.
Make money should be easy, not hard.
Yeah, not hard. But, I mean, don't get me wrong. The show was great, but... The venue was...
Yeah, that's been in the headlines lately, the venue collapse.
Well,
that's amazing. I've heard you say something else about...
Yeah, my dad told me, because my dad done construction for like a long time, and he said that their company that they hired to do that shit didn't do very well. And that they were lucky last year the NFL didn't have a crowd, because if they did, they would be screwed.
So this could be a problem in future events.
I don't know how they're going to get the whole.
Because they got NFL.
NFL fucking starts in what, 2 weeks?
Yeah, right
weeks,
around the corner.
If anything, yeah, it's just crazy. They already had one preseason game there, but I don't know how.
And we as taxpayers here in Nevada,
dude, we fucking paid for it 6 months in a row.
Yeah, man.
6 months in a row, we've paid their lease in the stadium. It's trash.
And you can't even go there and
but the
enjoy
best part,
a beer.
The best part of the night, though, as a Broncos fan, was when they showed the like Derek Carr and all the Raiders shit. They've got literally just rained down booze.
Yeah, baby.
Like, it was so funny. In the Raiders stadium, bro.
Ooh.
They showed the Raiders logo, Derek Carr, John Gruden, and they're fucking boo.
Dude, I feel
days,
it. You know me,
bro.
And you both hardcore Broncos fans.
That
man,
show's hilarious.
I grew my
like,
whole life up.
Great.
Fuck the Raiders.
This is great. Well, that's
get
where
on the bandwagon
it's
now.
Weird. Like,
shit.
Oakland to Vegas is like two complete different areas, yeah. Like, sure, people in Vegas, I feel like they don't embrace the Raiders like they did, like, the Golden Knights. The Golden Knights were like Vegas' team started in Vegas.
Yeah.
And then, of course, with everything that happened when they started, like, they were Vegas' team. Like, the Raiders are never, ever going to get to that, like, level of fandom, I feel like.
Well, dude, when I first moved here, like, 9 years ago now, the first things I noticed is, you know, obviously we didn't have pro sports then, but there were team-specific bars everywhere. Like, there was multiple bars you could go to that were straight Denver Broncos bars. Like, you
there
went
still
in
is.
There.
We're a fucking Raiders town. We're still Bronco bars all over town.
Yeah, like, you go in there, it's decked out in Bronco shit. They only show Broncos games. It's Bronco-themed. It's Bronco-fan-friendly, clearly. It's the shit.
You get, like, half
I
off.
Love it.
They give away shit. Like, all
like they don't have that in, because I moved from Colorado. It's not like they don't have that in Colorado. Every bar is a fucking Bronco bar, technically. So that was dope, and I liked that. But part of that is there's not a solidified fan base here that's going to just embrace the Raiders. Fuck no. Everybody sees it as a chance to see their team when they come to town.
That's what I'm saying. Like, a lot of people I know are like,
that's what I said. I was like, dope. I can see the Broncos one game.
I'm picking up the Broncos tickets. I'm picking up the Eagles tickets. You know what I mean? Like,
dude.
I've never really heard anyone be like, I can't wait for the Raiders home games.
Ain't nothing at all like the fucking the Golden Knights.
Yeah,
I mean, they got embraced, especially after, you know, the October 1st shooting.
Like,
the way that they kind of stepped up for the community. it kind of created a bond, I feel like, between the citizens here and that outsiders don't really know nothing about.
Yeah.
But that's legit.
So one thing that did happen during the show that I do want to talk a little bit about is a young man named Gable Stevenson, who is a gold medalist for the United States.
Yeah, so people might have heard that name here at least.
Yeah, once or twice.
The Olympics.
He's also a protege of one Brock Lesnar, who also made his return at this event. And so they brought
Gable. Hold on. Before we go into that, didn't you tell me that Brock Lesnar has a ponytail?
Yeah, Brock Lesnar looks like fucking Goro from Mortal Kombat right now, bro. He's got
That's the guy with the ponytail on top of his head, right? The big old dude?
Okay, just making sure.
Yeah, it's exactly what he looks like.
That I was not tripping. I can't imagine.
Dude, I'm not going to lie, though. Brock looks like he's in great shape. He looks yacked.
I bet he does. You can always count on Brock, especially
when he's cut, free though, to be Brock. He didn't look like normal, just like ginormous. Like, you know, normally he looks like humongous and kind of just like a little bit layer of fat. Yeah. But like, you know, it's just because he's big. Like, he actually looked kind of cut.
He's a machine.
Yeah, he's
I got to check that out. Okay, but anyways, now go back to Gable Stevenson.
Gable Stevenson, so he's now kind of like a next step prospect across a whole array of sports, whether it be MMA, WWE, like wrestling, and then also he like was offered a fucking contract by the Buffalo Bills. So this all matters, and this all mixes in with MMA, because this guy was at five places this weekend. He was at the WWE event, he was at the AEW, which is like the WWE's direct rival, but then he also went to the PFL, was at Bellator, and then had a sit down meeting with Dana White.
Well,
so
definitely making the rounds.
If my question to you is basically, if you were him, what would you do?
If I was him, I would lean towards the PFL. He's going to be what, heavyweight, light heavyweight at the minimum?
Yeah, I don't think he makes 205. So I doubt it.
So, because I wouldn't touch the UFC as a prospect at that level with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah. The pay structures wouldn't be there, I would think.
Oh, no. Or, actually, out of everything that you mentioned, though, and I tend to dismiss it because it's not my thing, but that doesn't mean it's not a legit thing, and I don't have a problem with it. WWE, if he's real smart, actually, he should just go into WWE and then, go join an MMA gym or whatever, which I'm sure he's got lined up.
Yeah.
And make a big name for yourself over there. Hone your skills on the side. Yeah. Make a shit ton of money. Then when you finally decide to go and maybe wind up in the UFC, it doesn't matter that they don't pay their fighter shit.
Yeah, because you'll be at the top of the food chain. You already have a following. That's one thing that people don't realize, is a lot of guys who already have a built-in following are always going to get paid no matter where they go. And that's why I think if he goes to WWE or AEW, which is like kind of the same thing, their ability to build his brand and like his ability to build this persona that he... I mean, obviously...
He's going
to
be a face or a heel.
Yeah, face or heel. But you can't... Like, a lot of people, once they leave the WWE and, like, they know they're done with that, kind of step away and break that. So it's kind of called kayfabe. They break that.
I know about that shit.
Yeah. So, I mean, ultimately, he could really just do that. He could go to the WWE for 3, 4, or 5 years, get into an MMA gym. He's only fucking 20.
I think that would be smart.
Like, he's 20 years old. So he takes 5 years... jumps into MMA when he's 26, 27, and in the prime physical part of his life, and has honed all his skills and is ready to take over. Because honestly, if he takes that same approach that he took to wrestling into mixed martial arts, the sky's the limit. Like,
I would certainly say so.
And the athleticism he has for a guy that size, too. Like, for people who don't know, he did a fucking... like, not just like a backflip after he won the Olympics. He did like a fucking somersault where he was in the air like a fucking gymnast after he won the gold medal.
And how big is he?
I want to say like 240.
Like 240, or like 6 foot, 6'2", 6'3", something like that.
Like sub six something, something like that.
So
he's like Brock's size, but not as jacked.
Not a typical guy doing backflips.
Fuck no.
We're trying to say not a small wiry motherfucker.
No.
Well, I think that's awesome, and it's cool he's making the rounds out there, and I'm really excited to see what he's doing. And like I mentioned earlier, as long the worst thing he could do is sign with the UFC, because the UFC would offer him some shitty-ass contract, and then as good as he is wrestling, he's not a seasoned MMA fighter. He's not going to go win the title and reign for years. He's going to wind up getting beat, most likely. Most likely they'll sap what little name value he currently has out of him, get him a shitty fucking record, then he's got to, you know, have that tarnish on his MMA career that he could avoid, because they're not going to pay him the big bucks. He's not going to
pay him the big bucks for in consideration to everybody else who is at hit like at his point in his career.
Well, yeah, he'll get like a 50,000 50-50.
Yeah, he'll get like a 50-50 or 100-100. 50K
to show, 50K like, to win. Yeah. Maybe 100 if he's lucky.
Yeah, but I don't think he's going to get nothing else. Nothing.
And that's
crazy.
That's not WWE numbers. WWE pays way more than that. PFL pays more than that.
Serious money.
He could cruise through a PFL fucking heavyweight championship, probably.
Probably.
I mean, shit.
Just ground and pound everybody.
Then, well, let's talk about that. Let's shift into the UFC. We said so we were going to talk about the state of the UFC, right?
Mm-hmm.
And fighter pay is one of the things that I want to talk about. But there was a UFC event this past weekend, right? We saw Jared Cannonier fight Kevin Gastelum at 185 pounds.
Very close fight.
It was a good fight. We're both fans of Kelvin here.
I thought Kelvin won. I thought it was really close.
I thought it was a lot closer than the scores would indicate. Yeah. But he did win a unanimous decision.
Yeah.
And afterwards, he does a typical in cage interview, Dana Cormier this time. And one of the things that he comes right out and says is what?
He said, I can't afford to get injured in my fights anymore because I'm broke, basically.
Yeah, he said, I'm broke. And he can't wait either for a title shot. He can't sit around and wait 9 months because he's broke for a title shot.
Yeah.
This is a guy who
said he's willing to take a short notice fight against any top contender at this point because of that. It's crazy.
This is a repetitive story we're hearing. We just had Misha Tate last week come out and talk about, yeah, she's like, yeah, I got a $200,000 purse, right? And like 70% of it went to taxes and like 28% of it went to my gym fees, my manager's fees, my diet, my fucking special shit I gotta eat, and it left me about $4,000 in my account to fucking be like, yay.
That's crazy.
We've got John Jones versus Francis Ngannou can't get made because those guys would like to get paid.
Yeah.
We've got fighters having GoFundMe accounts to have training camps where companies like Triller and celebrities like Jake Paul are contributing funds to UFC signed UFC fighters fighting on ESPN at what is supposed to be the pinnacle of the sport.
Mm-hmm. Well, take that even out of the equation. Take the first two that happened because, you know, like they were like brand new signings and all that. We're talking about Jared Cannonier, who's been in the UFC for what, 4 or 5 years? He's fought over 3 different weight classes. He has wins in every single one of them. He's fucking literally the number 3 middleweight in the world.
In the premier organization,
in the world. And he's talking about he's scared to get hurt in fights because he broke his arm in his last fight and he fucking drained his bank account.
And what do we see week after week with these fighters with their, what do they use to ask for? And after they have any kind of fucking submission or KO, they're begging Dana for what? A 50K bonus. Mm-hmm. And I'm not throwing shade at them. That's how desperate they are.
They need to. Yeah.
And let's not act like a 50K bonus is shit, bro. That's not some fat stack.
No.
How many? I'm sorry. $50,000. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, how does that compare to like a bonus you get in the NFL? Uh-huh.
Everyone on the team wins $1 million if you win Super Bowl.
Yeah, we're signing bonuses,
all that shit.
50K.
But what does this all tie into? Unions. No one will fucking unionize. No one will unionize. And I'm not a big fan of him lately, but George Masvidal said it best last week when he was talking about it. He said no one will unionize because no one is willing to fucking get paid. Like you know what I'm saying? Everyone is stepping on each other's necks when it comes to getting paid.
And the UFC won't bend to the few that do stand. Like Francis Ngannou tried to make a stand. John Jones is sitting on the goddamn sidelines because he won't get paid.
Yeah.
All right, I admire that. But look, the UFC don't give a shit, bro. They just sidelined what could have been their biggest star when they have an incredible lack of stars right now, which is another problem with the state of the UFC. But instead, they're promoting a fucking bullshit heavyweight title.
Yeah.
Because why? They don't want to shell out money.
Yeah.
And what does Dana keep saying in the news about the company?
Oh, this is the greatest year we've ever had. It's the greatest year you ever had. Why is half your fucking your stars out because you can't? You're not paying them enough. You can't sit there and say have things like say things like, "Oh, this is one of the best years we ever had." And then when someone comes to the negotiating table and say, "I want more money because this is one of the best years you've ever had," say, "We're broke. We can't afford to pay you."
Remember when he said that they can't add any more to the bonuses of full time because it would bankrupt the company or some bullshit? Remember? I'm probably exaggerating that, but he said something like it would destroy the bottom line if they make the 75K bonuses permanent.
Yeah, stupid as fuck.
Oh, really? Stop. Stupid as fuck. That's ridiculous.
And you know what ends up happening there is the quality of the product goes down because then you have to bring in a bunch of guys who are willing to take the smaller paydays. I think that's kind of where like the whole like bringing back Tough and like Contender Series kind of comes into it because those guys don't get paid that much for those fights at all.
Dude, they can't even do those right though. Like they bring back Tough, right? We just had the season, which was okay. But now we've had the finale announced and what? We've got like three fights from the card because two of them are for the title because they had two.
And then one guy was from the he got injured during the season.
Right.
But yeah.
And nobody else on the card. It's usually a whole card filled with guys.
It's usually like a showcase of everyone who was in the season and then like the guys who win and the guys who lose, like, you know, you kind of get to see their talent level and then you go from there and then you sign
and these
those
guys get more experience. Even if they have like less fights that count on their record, their time in the house counts in the UFC's eyes as more experience,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And instead they go with the Contender Series, which while, yes, it's entertaining, it's putting so many fighters into the UFC that are
ready.
Dude, they're like, they should be in Bellator or PFL with the way their records are. They're like 6-0,
like
6-1.
Get a few more legacy fights.
They're not ready.
Yeah.
That's why, the UFC just cut four guys, and I think two of them were from the Contender Series, and they went 1-4 and 0-4 collectively.
Yeah.
Okay, these are guys that won their contracts. Because that doesn't mean they're shitty fighters. They shouldn't be there yet. But it circles back.
Well, that's the thing. There's an opportunity, and there's also Dana White taking advantage of the opportunity. You know, you can see, like, just because someone... Here's the thing. The model of the Contender Series is kind of bullshit. Because, like, a finish doesn't really prove you're a good fighter. Like, yeah, getting a finish is big. But you could also be fighting a very high-level fighter and display extraordinary techniques that just, like, jump off the page for someone like Dana White. And he should see your talent and be able to evaluate you in that way. You shouldn't have to be able to knock someone out in fucking 27 seconds and be like, oh wow, he's the next best thing. Getting a 27 second knockout is great, don't get me wrong, and yes, you probably have a lot of talent if you're able to do that, but that's not the end all be all of talent. People like, let's just use a perfect example, people like Austin Vanderfort, who came in and won a decision on the Contender Series, was passed on. And now look at him now. He's fighting for the Bellator championship next because he's a very talented fighter and has very solid skills.
Which he's proven in his time in Bellator. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And it circles right back to the original topic of fighter pay because Dana doesn't – he can pay these guys shit contracts
because they're
and fill cards with them.
Yeah.
Where ESPN doesn't care as long as they hit the numbers.
Yep.
UFC gets – even on the pay-per-views, UFC gets a guaranteed half mil.
Yeah.
They just got to fill these fucking cards. And he can sit there and turn to his bosses and say, look all this extra money we're making, which, oh, by the way, gives him more money too. He has a vested interest in keeping fighter pay low because it influences the bottom line of the company where if it hits certain milestones, he gets more money.
Yeah.
And I'm tired of it. Honestly, I'm tired as a fan of watching this shit and seeing these guys begging for money every week. And I don't mean it against them.
Not against
them.
It
makes
me embarrassed.
It's just sad.
It
makes
me
embarrassed to be a fan. I'm like, fuck, this company won't even pay these fucking guys.
Yeah, and that shit, what he just did was extraordinary.
We're the biggest goddamn sports network there is, ESPN, at the biggest company in MMA there is. And we're still, these guys are like, please give me 50K or I'm broke.
When have you ever seen anybody in the NBA or anything like that jump? Like, talk about they're broke. Like, no one's broke.
I mean, I'm
people,
glad.
People step aside, you know, to get better contracts, and, like, they hold out of training camp and stuff like that to get better contracts.
Yeah.
But nobody holds out of that because they're broke and they need the better contract to survive. You know what I mean?
No, like, they can't pay their rent in their fucking $800 a month apartment type of broke.
None of that.
Like, no. And I don't, again, to be clear, no shade. I'm glad the fighters are saying this because we need to have this conversation.
Well, and
I'm just tired of hearing it. It makes me embarrassed for Dana. It makes me embarrassed for the UFC. Like, this is the best you can fucking do, you assholes.
And, well, and, like, another thing that is sad that Misha Tate said, she was, like, saying that if you are in this sport, you're doing it because you love it. You're not doing it because you want to get rich. Because if you're doing it because you want to get rich, you're in the wrong sport. And every single – and she was, like, that's why she said that she's not that upset by her – not really having much money to show for after that fight, because she's not in this for the money. She's in it for the legacy, which I get. I get that mentality. You have to have that mentality.
That's admirable, but this is professional sports.
Yeah,
this isn't
professional sport.
Meddling tournaments. This isn't the fucking taekwondo where you're just out there to get them fucking the belts and the fucking medals and the tourneys, and you don't care if there's a crowd there or not. This is the UFC. This is the pinnacle of mixed martial arts. And look, the truth is, there's a simple way to solve this.
It's a union.
Well, no, it doesn't even have to be a union. Like, I can solve this whole problem for the UFC without costing them a goddamn dime. They don't got to pay any fighters any more money. The fighters don't got to unionize anything. They don't got to do shit, Paul.
Oh,
all they have to do is allow a couple sponsors on the fucking shorts like they used to allow.
Yeah.
Doesn't cost them any more money. The shorts aren't getting spaced out. And these guys can make some real money instead of this ridiculous Venom cash. I don't want to hear about Venom money.
Yeah.
Fuck your $20K is the most you can get if you're a champ. Oh, I make $20,000. I mean, yeah, that might sound a lot to the average person.
Yeah.
That's a joke.
Yeah.
Most of those guys get $2,000-$3,000.
Yeah.
Or maybe an extra $5,000.
Yeah.
Don't forget that's taxed.
Yeah. So you get nothing.
It's bullshit, man. That's all they have to do, Paul.
It's true. That's true.
That changed the whole game. It crippled everybody. Mm-hmm. And now they can... They don't have to go crazy. You don't like it to be crazy. Okay, cool. Allow two.
Two works.
And then people can get little... Like, smaller guys can get smaller sponsors, and the bigger guys can get the bigger sponsors, and everybody's going to make more goddamn money, bro.
What if, instead of doing that, you could also, as the UFC... You have all these fucking sponsors all over your cage to begin with. Why don't you start smacking some of those same logos you have on your fucking cage on some of your fighters' fucking shorts, and then have tiers where, like, you know how, like,
oh, fuck that. They've already said they won't do that.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying? They did do it, though. They say they don't do it, but they did do it. Because they do it with fucking...
Just one.
No, two of them. They do it with the fucking P3, and they also do it with the fucking Monster Energy. So what the fuck?
They just did a $175 million deal with Crypto.com. These motherfuckers got to put that stupid shirt on right after the interview. Did you notice that at this last event? They're all rushing to put that stupid. They don't get no money from that. 10 years, $175 million. Fighters get jack shit. Now they got to run to put that shirt on for the interview.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous.
You know,
I mean, I get what you're saying. It's something with the monster and all that shit. How about you just let them get a sponsor?
It's not even that. I'm just saying, like, you could have a tier system where, like, your lower level fighters have some of your low level sponsors on their trunks, and they get paid out by them. Then you're higher.
Then what determines a lower level fighter, though? These idiots doing the rankings.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
I mean, right now they do the tenure in the company, which it makes no sense because they'll have a major star come in from another organization and they get $2,000 from fucking Venom.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm sure they're fucking spending that the club.
Yeah, fuck.
I mean, it's just, I don't get it. It seems like a simple fix to me. There you go. You guys get two. You just get two patches. Mm-hmm. Can't be no porn or fucking condoms,
stupid
stupid shit Dana don't like.
It could be like, there obviously could be restricted.
Because you can get real money with that. They can get an extra, I mean, fuck, you can get 50, 100K for shit like that from some companies.
Yeah.
Smaller fighters can get 10, 20K. That's more than they make for the fight sometimes.
Yeah, true. That's what, like, fighters like Brendan Schaub said, that, like, that pushed him out of fighting. Obviously, he had some losses as well, but a big part of it was, like, when they switched to Reebok, he said he lost around $100,000 in sponsorship money that he would make on the outside of the UFC. That's crazy.
And he showed his tax returns on Joe Rogan's podcast to prove it, because Dana was like, that's bullshit.
Yeah.
Trying to make it sound like it, like he's lying.
Yeah.
Like he's trying to big himself up. It's ridiculous, man. Fucking, shut it. Fucking, and this isn't the only issue of the UFC right now. I mean, I wish it was. If that was it, we probably wouldn't be talking about it. But we touched on it briefly. How about the lack of stars that they have right now?
Yeah.
I mean, Conor shelved.
And I think that has a lot to do with it.
It's questionable anyways. Yeah, it does. John is not fighting. He was supposed to be the thing that came in and filled in with Conor gone.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He's shelved. Then Ngannou comes along, and he was supposed to be the next big thing. And then Dana shits all over him for fighter pay reasons.
Same thing with Stipe, too.
Same, and they did Stipe repeatedly. Who's a star in the UFC right now? I'm not saying who's a good fighter.
Demetrius Johnson left the promotion because he shit on him so much.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking, who's really the pay-per-view star of the UFC right now? Like seriously, who would you consider?
I mean, Khabib drew numbers across the world, but he's gone.
He's gone too, yeah. So who do you consider, like, the pay-per-view star of the UFC outside of Conor right now?
Who, Adesanya? You think that's a star when you're getting $300,000-$400,000 on a fucking pay-per-view? Yeah, really?
Adesanya is in the process of becoming a star, but he's not the star of the UFC yet.
Fuck no. And that's not throwing shade on him.
Yeah, it's not throwing shade. He's a great fighter, and he brings good numbers, but I feel like he's missing the right opponents to bring even better numbers. I think it's his problem.
Yeah, the guy he wants to fight is John, who ain't fighting.
Yeah, he's not even fighting. Well, and like, he does better live numbers than he does like sell. Like, you know what I mean? Like, when every fight he has is sold out.
Who's a big signing the UFC had that you were excited about?
Nobody,
man. I couldn't tell you the last 20 fighters they signed.
Probably Terrence McKinney is probably the best signing they've had in the last fucking year and a half, at least.
Yeah, because they're just feeding in off the contenders.
But ultimately,
shade on those guys.
Yeah,
it's
not even about that. It's basically what we're saying, though, is like they're using kind of like a crop of guys that they're like, they know will pick up at the, you know.
Dude, like we have this show. I'd look at MMA media every day, not just UFC, other promotions. I mean, I think we're about as involved as you can be unless we were actually in the business. Mm-hmm. And I look at these cards, and I don't know half these fucking fighters who are on these cards the UFC puts out. I've never heard of them. I don't know anything about them. Like, they don't make any stars. They have a talent agency that owns them as a parent company, but they can't make a star out of anybody.
I feel like also when I remember, like, before in the UFC, I feel like there was a lot more, like backstory that was told before the fights happened and a lot less story told during the fight. Because that's what I don't like. I don't like how, like, the commentary team is constantly telling stories about guys in the fight.
Well, that's another serious issue, too, is the commentary.
But
yes, sir.
That's the thing, though. Remember, like, when back in the day when it was just Goldberg and Rogan, they would, like, when the guy was walking to the cage, he'd tell some kind of anecdotal story about the guy.
Yeah, Goldberg, yeah.
But,
usually,
but
yeah.
It wouldn't be
yes,
during the fight.
Right. One or two things about the dude. Yes, exactly.
And
during
that would
walk-in.
Help. That would help because then you'd, like, it would want you leaving more. Fucking DC tries to tell you their whole life story in the middle of the fight.
Dude, I've been watching a lot of PFL lately, and I just noticed their commentary is just so much better because they simply talk about what's going on in the fight. And then there's moments of silence where they just let you watch the fight. Instead of what you just said, the UFC, where unfortunately Daniel Cormier is the prime example of it, it's fucking story time and non-stop talking.
And that's the thing, too, is like, I don't even know if it's his own fault.
It's not even about the fight. So it's not non-stop talking about the action in the cage. It's non-stop talking about ancillary bullshit.
That's the thing, too, is like, I don't even know if it's Daniel Cormier's fault anymore because it's gotten to like such a level where other people like have come out to defend him online and been like, he's reading what the UFC wants him to read. And it's like, if that's the case, that's an even bigger problem.
It's a joke, man. Like, I can't stand it. It's so distracting for me.
Yeah.
Like, I can't imagine how a casual fan who doesn't really understand what's happening in the cage other than there's a fight going on, feels when things are happening and no one is explaining anything at all.
Yeah.
Like, PFL explains shit. BKFC explains what's happening in the cage.
PFL Bellator does. Bellator, I think Bellator does. Probably has the best.
Boxing does,
bro. I think Bellator probably, if you, because Joe Rogan's kind of stepped to the side as far as, like, the UFC. Like, he's on some teams, and it's great when he's on it. But I think if you look at Bellator's, like, commentary team post-fight and, like, during the fight, I think they have the best one in MMA right now. Look who they got. They got freaking Big John,
yeah.
And then they have, sometimes they'll have Mario Ronello, which is, I think, people don't like him, but I like him.
I don't mind him.
And then they got freaking Josh Thompson. They always bring in, like, Chandler. They got a play-by-guy guy play
that actually gives play, and the color guy just sticks to color. Mm-hmm. It's not just color commentary. Yeah,
true. And then they also have Jay Glazer on the fucking, like, the pre-show and shit. And Jay Glazer's always great. And he knows, and he's, for like, a media guy, he's very knowledgeable about, like, mixed martial arts and stuff like that. So, like, everyone they have at those tables, whether it's Chael, Josh Thompson, all, you know, because they do that little, same thing the UFC does, a little Bellator pre-show, UFC pre-show. I think the Bellator pre-show is better right now.
I agree.
Especially with the UFC getting rid of Errol Hawani in the post and pre-show, too. Like, he brought a whole nother, like, side to it, I thought, too, which they don't have anymore. And now it's just insert X fighter here. Like, in
an X fighter, not their fault. They're getting paid. Good for you. But they're just...
No, I'm not hating on their commentary. I'm saying...
No, I'm saying... That's not what I'm saying. Yeah. They're UFC shills, though, is what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
They're not an objective commentator. They're a shill for the UFC that's not going to, for instance, during the Cyril Gane, Derek Lewis fight, talk about the absurdity of this interim title. They're just going to talk about how we need an interim champion because they're not an objective commentary team.
Well,
not their fault they're taking the job, but I'm just saying that's what the UFC puts in place.
Yeah.
And that part sucks. We don't need a bunch of UFC shills being on the commentary team.
Yeah.
And not just the commentary team, but the broadcast team as well.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, too, is it's not even that they need to go as far and say that, but it's how the UFC, when they do things like that, they try to act like... Like, did you ever hear them even really talk about Francis during that? Like, no. They were almost told, like, don't say Francis. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's, like...
Because that's the other thing. That's another thing that we can add to the list is the titles being devalued in the WME age, with the prime example being the heavyweight championship.
There should be no such thing as an interim title unless someone is injured.
And to recap, if anybody listening doesn't know, they created an interim title over a difference in availability over 2 weeks for the heavyweight champion of the world.
Yeah.
Who won the title 90 days prior to them wanting him to fight again. He said, I need 2 weeks more because he was in his home country.
Yeah.
They said, nah, we're going to create an interim because they needed to have a title on a pay-per-view spot.
And then Dana came out and said, if you want to go vacation, you want to go party, do what you want to do, but we'll be here making fights.
And this ties back into the overarching theme because Francis Ngannou went out publicly complaining about fighter pay and not being able to get the Jones fight due to fighter pay.
Mm-hmm.
And then look what happens.
Exactly.
So they devalue their titles. We see it repeatedly. I mean, how many interims have there been now since WME took over and
10.
The Fertittas left? It's all the fucking time. Mm. I mean, I'm pretty sure that Cyril Gane's not active enough as the interim right now, so I expect Dana's going to announce an interim tomorrow. I mean, at this point.
Yeah.
Because they have a new event that just popped up. I mean, it's ridiculous.
It just gets out of control. It, like you said, it devalues your belt as the champion.
And for me, as a fan, it's all of these things adding up over time now. We've got constant fighter pay problems. We've got your fucking lack of stars and interesting fighters. We've got titles being devalued. We've got rookie fighters being pumped up where they shouldn't be. How about the card stacking on these things? The way they're laying out their cards.
A perfect example, this card coming up next week, J.J. Aldridge versus Jason Cortez is on the bottom of the prelims. Both those ladies are seasoned, like, and top of, like, level fighters. Like, why are they not on the main card? Why? And if they are on the prelim, why are they not the main event of the prelim? Tracy Cortez is like a rising star in the UFC. And JJ Aldridge is also a very, very solid fighter. And both of them have a very bright future. And to just stash him at the bottom of a fucking prelim like that just makes no sense to me whatsoever.
It's like they haven't tried to make a star since Paige and Sage, have they?
Yeah, not really. Well, I mean, and here's the thing. There's no – that's another thing about the Contender Series that I dislike is they do go a little bit into the backstory to try to kind of build stars, but I feel like they kind of have shied away from that. Like, in the first two seasons, they had, like, you know, Sean O'Malley, and, like, they had, like, the bigger – some of their bigger stars came from those first two ones because I think they focused more on – like every fighter, and there was only one contract, so there was like a more story behind it, and everything was more high stakes. Now I feel like Dana's kind of overused it and been like, well, if you don't want to fight, I got a guy on from the Tuesday Contender Series that will take your fight right now. You know what I mean? And he's like kind of thrown some of them to the wolves. Like even Sean O'Malley to a certain extent. You know what I mean? Like there's been stars that have come from the
Michael Chandler. Just hold that name. Just occurred to me. We were trying to think of some big name they've signed. Michael Chandler.
Chandler. Yeah.
And he's big in the MMA world.
Yeah, true.
Okay, but that's it. So, but you're right. These guys coming from this, you're right, 100%.
It's tough because you put them in a bad situation too. Because if the fucking UFC calls you tomorrow and says you want to fight in the Contender Series, fuck yeah, you take it. So, like, there's really no, like we've said from the beginning, this is no diss towards any fighter, but it's, you're being taken advantage of, like, definitely to a certain extent, you know what I mean? Like,
it is, and you know, this circles around what you just said, is that, you know, they get the call, they say yes, they're going to take it, because why? Because they need the exposure.
Yeah.
And that, you know, we're talking specifically about the UFC, and I don't want to delve too much into this, but they need the exposure because MMA media refuses, for some strange reason, at least the major news sites, to shine a light on any of the minor promotions except a small handful. Like MMA Junkie sometimes reports on LFA.
Probably Sharedog.
King of the Cage.
Sharedog is the only fucking website that is... that has everything, but that's more of like an open forum to begin with.
But for some strange reason, they will write endless stories about what Conor McGregor tweets about. And what some fighter, like a retired fighter, thinks about what Conor McGregor tweeted.
Yeah.
They write goddamn headline news stories about that nonsense.
Yeah, or like
while ignoring
Sean O'Malley going to party with 6ix9ine. Like, who cares, dude? He's fucking living his life. Fucking cares. Why are you writing articles about that?
Right.
Yeah, or like articles about like fucking Twitter posts and fucking, oh, did you see the video log that so and so posted? And like,
interviewed fighters on this show that have gone on to fight for championships in some of these minor leagues right now, and not a mention of it. Yeah. Not a mention of the event, not even just it happened, here's the results. You don't got to write a goddamn article on it. You could just report the fucking results.
Yeah.
Nothing. Yeah. It's silence.
Doesn't make any sense.
And so, these guys that get a shot at that, of course they jump on it.
Yeah.
They get offered some 6-6 contract, or what is it now, 12-12 in the UFC? Like that. Dude, that's a joke. 12 grand
if you lose,
another 12 to win.
Yeah. It's fucked up.
I'm tired of it, and it all ties together, man. Except the commentary doesn't have really anything to do with the money, but a lot of it ties into the fighter pay and the money, and everything is starting to weigh together, whereas a fan, I'm finding it just more and more difficult to watch UFC shit, honestly.
I mean, it's not even that. I just feel like the UFC is probably, like, it's got to be, like, one of the most controversial, like, topics in MMA right now. Like, honestly, there's... everybody's like in all kinds of different like angles on it because.
And ESPN is the biggest name in sports, right? They're not going to report on it for the most part. I would guarantee you, they're not going to report on it because they're not in bed with the UFC, but they're broadcast partners with the fucking UFC. Yeah. UFC success equals ESPN success. More people buy an ESPN pay per view or tune into these events, it's beneficial to them. So they're not going to shine some fucking big light on shady shit going on as a company. That people like that we're talking about right now.
Yeah.
This doesn't even dive into shit like the lawsuit that's going on. Everybody wants to pretend that's not happening while it just marches on forward. Yeah. Some websites do give noise to that. Like Bloody Elbow does give some updates by Josh Nash on the fucking lawsuit and stuff. But that's beside the point. That's just UFC. UFC gets enough press.
Yeah.
These guys wouldn't jump onto this, again, if MMA media gave them a bit more light when they were in these smaller orgs. Mm-hmm. So that's the state of the UFC right now, in my opinion. It's disappointing, man. It makes me sad to be a fan. I want more for these fighters. Like, and that's honestly what it all boils down to, right?
Yeah.
Why do we want the titles to be valued more? Why do we want them to make more money? Why would we like to see more experienced fighters in the UFC where I thought the best fought the best?
Just makes the product better and better.
Sorry, you can't be the best if you have 10 fights.
I mean, you can, but, like, there's definitely...
I don't know. Maybe you could 10 years ago, but I don't know these days. Maybe.
These days, the fucking evolution of fighting is, like, on a whole nother... If you have, like, an extensive amateur background in MMA in general, then, yeah, maybe, like... People who are coming in and just like going pro and going like there was a guy on Ultimate Fighter who was just like, yeah, I just kind of watched YouTube videos and taught myself how to fight, and then he lost the first fight. I was like, okay, so why are we bringing in a guy like that to be?
Yeah,
you know,
why
like,
are we doing that in the UFC? Like, yeah. So it doesn't help when you have people like, look, I like Chael Sonnen. And I'm not talking about Chael Sonnen while he's in his role as a broadcaster for the UFC, but I see him as like a pure UFC shill, even on his own Bad Guy Inc. YouTube channel. Like, I watched a video of him today, bro, talking about this Francis Ngannou, Cyril Gane thing, and he was saying that he heard that there's problems behind the scene about getting that fight done, and he was... said that Francis hadn't fought in so long that he couldn't remember when. And then proceeded, really? Of course, side with the UFC about the whole thing. And despite Francis, you know, whatever the complaint was, it doesn't matter because he's under contract and he needs to get out and do the fucking thing because it's been so long since he's fought. Dude, he fought like 145 fucking days ago from this moment now.
Yeah.
That's a joke.
Yeah.
But like...
It's crazy.
And he does things like that all the time. And he can do whatever he wants. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying he's an influential figure in a world where even the media reports on tweets. Chael is looked at as a source of media. And he'll sit there and do a whole thing and won't point out how fucked up that is.
Yeah. I see what you're saying.
You know. Mm-hmm. I don't get it. It's like the UFC has a monopoly on everything. Even the media.
It just doesn't make any sense, though.
I don't. Anyways. I mean, they do report bad on the UFC, yes, but.
Yeah, but they don't...
It's what's going on.
Yeah. That's a whole other conversation.
It's hard to be a UFC fan right now, and then you're asking me to pay $80 for a fucking pay-per-view. Really.
Yeah. Pay $80 pay-per-view for a guy in the main event who can't afford to fucking feed his kids tomorrow if he doesn't win.
Yeah. So I can watch fucking fight after fight. Or fighters beg for a $50,000 bonus because they're dead ass broke.
Yeah.
It's making me cringe, man. All right, well, let's shift from that. There was some other things that we wanted to talk about on the show. How about what I find to be a positive story in the world of combat sports, who they also had an event this past weekend, but let's talk about the BKFC. So they had their BKFC 20 event this past weekend, which saw bantamweight title fight. The vacant spot because Dat Nguyen decided to not re-sign and then was then stripped of the title.
Yeah.
So we had former champ Johnny Bedford fighting Reggie Barnett, who they fought once before. This is a rematch. Bedford won before as a decision.
Split decision, I believe.
Split decision. And it was a hell of a good fight, which once again saw Johnny Bedford beat Barnett by decision, unanimous this time. And I thought it was a pretty convincing. It was a great fight, but it was a clear win for Bedford, who now becomes the first two-time champion in the BKFC. And as we mentioned before, this is their 20th event. And they're really starting now, I think, to establish themselves as a legitimate
promotion here, Paul. Yeah. I mean, the co-main event was Alan Belcher versus Tony Lopez, mm-hmm. and that's significant because Alan Belcher, A, was at heavyweight, which is interesting, yeah. but B, is another well-known name in combat sports.
Yeah.
All right, another former UFC fighter, but not, you know, that over the hill where it's weird.
Yeah.
And he was victorious with the decision at heavyweight. They've had a lot of big signings.
Yep. Chad Mendes.
Paige VanZant. I mean, she hasn't been the most successful signing, but she's a large name in there. I mean, they've got their BKFC, their BKTV app, which we receive no money from. We are not sponsored by BKFC, and I keep saying every week it's a great deal because it is, dude. It's fucking $3.99 a month, and you get all their episodes or all their pay-per-views, and then their library, which continually gets updated with their stuff. So, I mean, they've tried to do the social media thing, you know, with having the social media fighters.
I mean, those are come and go kind of things, you know, like those happen. Even the UFC did those, you know. UFC had that box, it had the fucking James Toney versus Randy Couture, you know, like there's always some kind of freak show fights that happen. That's, you know, that's the nature of the game, you know. It's all a part of the process. I mean, 20 pay-per-views in, that's a pretty big landmark.
Yeah, they were established in 2018. I mean, it's only 2021 as we're recording this right now, you know, midway through this year.
Yeah.
And they've just showed continued growth. They've got big name signings and their champions list, because most of their divisions they've held tournaments for.
Yeah.
And as their roster has grown, they've held a tournament to determine the winner. And right now, when you look down the list, like, their heavyweight champion is Joey Beltran.
Former UFC fighter.
Former UFC and Bellator fighter, pretty well-known guy. Their cruiserweight champion, which is 205 there, is Hector Lombard.
Former Bellator champion, former UFC fighter.
Right. Their middleweight, Thiago Alves.
Former UFC title contender.
Yeah, these are all, like, if you said these to any combat sports fan, they're like, I know these people.
Yeah.
Their super welterweight champ, which is their next division, that they have, Louis Palmino of WSOF.
WSOF.
Fame. Like, that dude is a hell of, I mean, he had wars with Justin Gaethje.
Yeah, those Justin Gaethje fights are crazy.
Their lightweight right now is vacant. Their bantamweight, we just mentioned. Now, they also have two titles going on, because they do the Police Gazette title, which can be weird if you don't hear the commentary team explain it, because it's a separate thing, but it is a traditional bare-knuckle title that dates back to, like, the 1800s.
Okay.
That is one of the oldest lineal bare-knuckle titles in the sport.
Okay.
And because BKFC is the most recognized bare-knuckle promotion, Police Gazette awards their fighters the championship. Kind of like the Ring awards out a ring belt, you know what I mean?
Yep.
It's kind of along that same vein. All right. So they have a list. A lot of them are dual, like Joey Beltran is, of course, the fucking heavyweight champion there as well. But they do have some other ones, like Beck Rawlings is a champion over there. That's where her title was. I think she was the last one. She's the champion in Recess. Okay, so she's not an official champ, but she's the Police Gazette champ still.
Damn.
And then she went over to you know, back to MMA.
Yeah,
she still kind of has that title. But point being, like, they're just establishing things. They're hooking themselves up with, you know, established belt in bare knuckle. They're on Fight TV as well as their app, which is, as we've talked about before, is owned by Triller now.
Right? Yeah.
So they're getting more hype around the Fight TV app. They're getting coverage on boxing websites. Their events are exciting.
Yeah.
And for a fucking dollar a week, I don't know where you can see anything better.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I do think one of my bigger criticisms of the BKFC before was their talent pool, but they seem to be getting better and better and better.
Look, you're going to see raw talent on the prelims. Like, they do the early prelims on YouTube. You're going to see guys that have the air about them of a tough man contest, okay? That's going to happen. There's going to be some experienced fighters and some really raw. They have a series called Toe the Line, which you can also see on their app, which is kind of like the Ultimate Fighter, where people try out, and if they win there, they can go on the show, onto like a pay-per-view.
Yeah.
And they usually get paired up with some newbie as well.
Mm.
There's going to be a lot of that, but when you get into the actual
main
card, these guys, like, let's talk about this last one. We had Johnny Bedford and Reggie Barnett. Barnett, before this fight, was 6-2.
Yeah.
Bedford was 5-2.
Yeah.
That's serious time in BKFC. That may sound like low.
Yeah.
That's not. That's a lot of bare knuckle experience. These are guys that when you see them in a cage, they clearly have strategies. They know what they're doing. It's very high level fighting. Yeah.
That's but, one thing. One reason why I do think Chad Mendes is going to do well in BKFC is because his ability to use the clinch in mixed martial arts and now his ability to use the clinch in BKFC, I think, will be big.
Yeah. When they've had Chad Mendes is a great example of a signing. They had Paulie Malignaggi, who was making Frank noise Mir. At the time. They've got Frank Mir coming in.
Yep.
Like, BKFC is exciting, and what they're doing is exciting. And you know what their broadcast team does? Seriously. They talk about the fights, Paul.
Yeah.
That's it. They explain what's going on in the cage. Like you said that Goldberg used to do, they give a little bit of background when
they're walking in. Yeah,
they got Chris Lytle. He's a former UFC fighter. And,
yeah.
And he's a good speaker. Like he's been like a politician. Like he's run for Congress or something. Like,
yeah.
That guy can explain what's going on well.
Yeah.
And they do a good job.
Mm-hmm.
It's enjoyable commentary because they're not filling it with nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
Their production level's pretty good.
Yeah.
Like the fights get going, they're 5 2-minute rounds, you know, so they get cracking, man. And they get going one right after the other. Like they rattle off their entire event, usually in about 4 hours, including like the pre-fight, like the pre-show stuff and the post-show.
They have a lot of prelim fights, too.
And they have more fights, I do believe, than UFC. UFC usually runs about 12 fights and it's about 6 to 8 hours.
Yeah.
BKFC will run 12 to 16 fights and knock it out in 4 hours or less.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not bad, bro. Never been disappointed. So I think it's cool to see them doing this. And they must be paying people decent enough.
Yeah.
Because Paige had choices.
True.
Like, these guys, like Thiago Alves, it's not like he can't go to Bellator. He can't go to PFL.
Yeah. It's true as well.
I mean, Frank Mir has money. Do you think he's just going to go sign for some chump change to go do bare knuckle fights?
Yeah, no way.
Of course not.
Yeah.
You know, like, whatever they're doing, wherever the money's coming from, because we don't know what their numbers are.
Yeah.
But they either have investors or they have a pool of cash that they're at least paying something to these guys. Paige said as much as ever been fucking paid.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah. That's crazy.
It is, and I'm excited about it, and I think they're doing great.
Mm-hmm.
There's enough time in between their events that it kind of builds some excitement. You know, it's like 30 days out for their next one.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we've discussed it, and I think we might as well announce it now. We're going to start adding a BKFC breakdown
segment
to the show. We might wind up actually doing it separate as a video on YouTube or as part of the audio podcast as well. That part we haven't decided, but we're gonna spend some more time talking about BKFC and shining a light on these fighters and their promotion and what they're doing here on the show. And hopefully we'll get some of their fighters on for interviews as well. But that leaves one other thing to talk about this week, Paul, right?
Yeah. So this week also on, I believe, what was it, Thursday night, we had the PFL 7 playoffs.
Headline, Michaela Harrison versus Jenna Fabian were the semifinals of the lightweights.
Mm-hmm. Michaela Harrison is an animal.
It was a really close fight. I mean, Jenna almost got one punch off, almost.
Almost.
No, I mean, no shade on her. She seems like a good fighter. She trains with Israel Adesanya. She's an established kickboxer. She's, you know, she's with City Kickboxing.
Mm-hmm.
They made a lot of talk beforehand about her scientific process of beating Kayla, but she got no strikes off.
Yeah.
She got no takedowns.
Kayla's a savage.
Kayla landed like 140 unanswered blows to like zero. Like, seriously.
Yeah,
it was a mauling.
It was crazy.
Like, Kayla pushed her up against the cage, picked her up, slammed her down, mounted her, and beat the shit out of her.
Yeah.
And then
that's what Kayla Harrison does.
And then she got on the mic and was like, I'm the best in the world, bitch, basically.
Mm-hmm. And she is. Maybe.
Not too much else I want to talk about other than that fight. I think she's going to win the tournament. I mean, we did see, and I'm sorry, I can't remember her name, the finalist that she's going to be fighting against fought as well, a split decision victory. I did watch that fight. I mean, yeah, she looks good, but she ain't got nothing for Kayla Harrison.
I don't think anyone in PFL does.
So let's talk about two things with the PFL. First, let's talk about, or not, maybe not in that order, let's talk about Kayla and what's next for her. Mm-hmm. And let's talk about the PFL, because we threw shade on them a year ago.
Yeah, we did. I thought they were going under.
Yeah, during the pandemic and the shutdown, it looked bad for PFL.
Yeah, it looked really rough. But I don't know what has gone on, but I guess they have a very, you know, big array of different celebrities that are invested in the PFL, I guess, and they hung on, and they're doing good.
I will give them credit where it's due. I've watched most of this season.
They made great signings all summer long, or I guess winter long.
And they're, as a company, they're doing something different, Paul. Yeah. They have a style to their broadcasts that is different.
They have, like, their advanced analytics and shit.
Yeah, they call it their smart cage. They show a live update of strikes, of kicks, of punch speed, of kick speed.
You got the ref cam.
They got it's kind of dorky, but it's cool. It's something different. It's noticeably different.
Yeah.
Paul, I really like this live stats.
And yeah, the live
strike
stats
of
cool.
The speed, the speed of the strikes is pretty interesting. There was one fighter, I believe it was a female, I can't remember her name right now, but who had a 61 mile an hour kick.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Fuck that.
Now, I'm assuming these numbers are accurate, but that's amazing. Like, can you imagine that hitting you, sir?
Fuck no.
But and then you have the tournament format on top of that, which is paying money at least to these winners. As far as I understand it, they get some sort of monthly thing that they're guaranteed.
Yeah.
So that they're not broke. You know, so they don't go on fucking camera and be like, I'm broke.
Yeah. Seems like a direct shot there, Jared.
yeah. It's funny. I didn't hear any of this in any other promotion. I only hear this in the UFC. But anyways, well, for the most part. I mean, like, Lance Palmer had issues. Everybody has various issues. But, all right.
What the fuck did Lance Palmer have issues with? He had issues with the company, not the money, though. He had he's won two in a row. He had $2 million. He didn't make the playoffs this year, though.
Yeah, I mean, $2 million, even after taxes, you should be styling, bro.
Chilling.
Fucking
A. He probably is.
It's more than they're getting. He ain't getting no $1 million in the UFC, sir.
No.
You're going to go win four fights and get that in the UFC. So I'm excited by what they're doing, and I give them credit. And I like that they're paying their guys money. I like that their style is different. I like the tournament format. So, and they're also growing some of their own stars, too. Mm-hmm. Like, what about Kayla Harrison now? She's probably going to win again.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that she said that she has one more fight left in her deal. Or if she wants to after this season, she's open to go elsewhere.
Yeah. I don't know if that's a great idea for her yet. Yet. Just because there is a connection with Amanda Nunes, and I don't think they're going to fight each other ever.
Yeah, let's say she does. Would she go to Bellator or UFC? So with the UFC, there's that right there. Amanda was in her corner at this last fight.
Yeah.
Against Jenna Fabian. So the chances are pretty unlikely she's going to jump there. And plus, she'd have to cut another 10 pounds to fuck around and get there.
Mm-hmm. Which she has done, though. She did it in Invicta earlier this year.
That's true. Bellator, however, would offer her a chance at sponsorship and more money.
Mm-hmm.
And a fight, if not immediately, pretty soon, with Cyborg.
To be honest, though, I think Kayla is on the level now that no matter it be Bellator or the UFC, she's getting paid serious money.
I think the Bellator, if she were to jump ship from PFL, would be the better way to go kill off, so to speak, Chris Cyborg.
Not only Chris Cyborg, but all the UFC, the former UFC, like, you know, the Katzenganos, Chris Cyborg, what's her name?
She can go do that for a minute while earning sponsorship money. And then Amanda is not going to be there forever in the UFC.
No.
I mean, she's on the short end of her career. She could retire after another fight or two and then...
Yeah. Another year or two, and then she can go over and take over the UFC.
If she wanted to go over for sporting reasons, not the money.
Which is why I do think if she was going to do that, maybe staying in PFL would be the right move. Because you know you're not going to get touched in PFL. You know you're going to get your mill at the end of the year, every year.
But how much longer is Chris Cyborg going to stay?
I don't think the Chris Cyborg fight is something that will solidify her legacy. I think that's just something that if she does do will be big, but I don't think it's really as big as it maybe once was. I don't think anyone really, really
have. I think she wants that because she can't really do the Amanda one. I'm just guessing here. I mean, I have a direct link to her psyche, so I know.
Okay.
Obviously.
Okay.
So.
But yeah, no, I see where you're coming with it, but you know what I'm saying? Like, I just don't think it's necessary for her legacy. Like, you know what I'm saying? I don't think she has to fight Chris Cyborg for people to look at her as like the GOAT in the women's if she goes undefeated in her career.
But it's an opportunity that's there, which was interesting.
Yeah, that's true.
And I don't know. I mean, the fact that, yeah, there's $1 million at PFL. Yes, that's at stake. But she might be able to get somewhere close in that range with the right sponsorships and fights.
In Bellator.
And I'm not saying that. It'd be less than that,
but,
most likely.
But then again, Bellator could bring her in and do $1 million tournament with women, and then she can fucking win $1 million in Bellator,
too. You never know. But I like it. It's exciting. I like that we're having this conversation because when we're talking about things that we don't like with the UFC, it's nice to be able to have alternatives that are providing legit.
Yeah,
contenders. It's like we got to go on YouTube searching for some bottom-rung MMA stuff. Mm-hmm. And there would be more if MMA Media would get on board with some of these promotions. I mean, that's a cool thing about, you know, Fight TV.
Yeah.
Not only do they have BKFC events, but they also have, like, Fusion Fight League, mm-hmm. some of these other ones where some of our guests are fighting on.
Yeah.
And that's cool. But it is exciting when we have PFL offering another alternative that's different. Mm-hmm. I think that wraps up our show for today, my friend.
Yep, I think that's it.
Well, thanks for tuning in, everybody. Hope you've enjoyed it. Hope you've enjoyed some fine cannabis along the way. If you're brand new to the show, you can catch us on KLVM Radio. You can catch us wherever you get your podcast from Spotify to Apple to Google and everywhere in between. We put all that handy information in one location.
SwapMade.com. You can head over there, click the gear button, and buy yourself a t-shirt. And follow us on Instagram, SwapMade Podcast.
Thanks, everybody.
Peace.
Later.